Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us this week, we're very lucky to have her here, is Assembly Member Amy Paulin, who represents New York's 88th District, which includes Scarsdale. Assembly Member Paulin is also chair of the Health Committee, a position formerly held by our friend Richard Gottfried, a Manhattan Democrat who retired fairly recently as the oldest serving legislator in the state. I remember him when he was the youngest, and someone I talked with over the radio for many years. Now you're the chair, Assemblywoman, and I'm so glad we finally have a chance to have a conversation on the Capital Connection. Welcome, Assembly Member Amy Paulin.
Thank you so much, Alan.
So, since you're joining us for the first time, please tell our listeners more about yourself, your district, and the issues that you really want to focus on.
Absolutely, happy to. So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, originally from the city, and moved to Westchester County when I got married. My husband grew up in Westchester. So we moved up here, and I have been, I think, I grew up as an adult, I like to say, you know, really in Westchester County. So I feel, I'm like a tale of two cities. I know I know the suburbs very well, but also having grown up in the city, have an appreciation of what it means and the importance of the city of New York to the entire state. So, you know, I was involved in politics even as a kid. Age 14, I was going already to the Democratic Club and in my local Madison Club in Brooklyn. And in fact, have some relationships with current members like Aline Weinstein, who came out of that same area. So I took that desire to be involved, I wouldn't say in politics per se, I would say more community. Throughout my life, I was always active in student government. I was president's first woman or young girl or whatever you want to call me at age 17, president of my high school.
Which was what high school?
I went to Tilden High School in Brooklyn.
Samuel Tilden
High School.
He was a president.
Samuel J. Tilden. Yes. I hope there's been many women presidents since then, but I was the first. So there had been someone who ran but lost, and then I ran and won. So I'm very proud of that. And
was it hard to be the first?
No. I love that. I've loved everything I've done, actually, but I loved being president of the high school. I loved, we did a We did the carnival. We did lots of fun things, and it was my first political race, and it was interesting to reflect back because you know I had competition, a strong competitor, but I won. I learned through that election, believe it or not, to understand what voters, because the voters were my, were my peers,
right.
What they care about, to think about what they care about. And actually, when I reflect back on that election, I realized that one of the things they cared about was I was a good student. They wanted a good student as their president. The other person who ran was not a good student, and I really do think that's what carried it over. So when I think about how that reflects on my current position, I know that my constituency, they want a serious legislator. They want someone who is going to work hard, not that they're going to agree with me on everything, but that they know someone is going to be working hard for them. And I think that's why I've always been very successful in my elections here. So it's interesting. I learned that as a young person, and it's helped me really in all of my elections since then, and there have been many.
So talk to us a little bit, if you can, about the role of women in contemporary politics, particularly legislative politics. It was a rare thing in the old days, and now we're getting to see more of it, but are we getting to see enough?
What's interesting when I started in the assembly is that there were some women who were senior members of the legislature who had great committees, but it was very much women who chose not to have children. So they were able to start young and continue to the point, because seniority was such a factor, it still is such a factor. And when I came in, there weren't that many women like me who had raised kids and then came back. I came into the assembly at a time when my kids were not completely grown, but at least in school. And so there weren't a lot of women like me. And now we're seeing a different thing. So I didn't achieve the kind of seniority at the same age because of that. So now I have it, obviously. I've got a very senior position, and I'm grateful for it. But it took me at an age where, like Dick had, did it much younger because of the fact that, he was able to start at a young age and didn't have the interruption of staying home with his kids. So the women today, there are many younger women. They're having their children and they're staying in the legislature, and they're having them while they're in the legislature. And that's great. They will achieve their a position of rank and seniority at the same rate as the young men who are involved now. So there's going to be much more of a parallel. And I think that's very important. Women and men have different life experiences, and it's best to have a good reflection of all experiences if you're going to have a body that is going to make decisions for the entire state of New York.
I had a girlfriend from Scarsdale. I remember it very well. It was an upper class community. Her father certainly was a person who believed in, rank. And so my question to you is, how much did growing up in an elite community like Scarsdale mean to you?
So when I first moved to Scarsdale, I have to say I was a little intimidated because of the type of community that I knew it was, very successful. Many people were very successful. And, we moved here. I was very young. I was 24 years old.
So you married then?
Yes, we had just gotten married and moved to Scarsdale, and so I was intimidated. There's no question. But over time, I realized that again, you know, I'm a joiner, so I joined a lot of the civic groups, and in town, I got to know people, they got to know me, and over time, I now consider myself a Scarsdalian, and it's a great community. It's a community of people who are very involved, who care a lot, who are well educated, you know, but probably most important are active in their community. They want to see the community do well. They want to see it thrive. They care about their education system. We have a terrific public school system. So I've really come to appreciate, you know, being here and understanding and being part of it.
Well, let's go back to that very good point that you just made, and which I think is significant. Look, people all over this state rely on education. They want good education for their kids. Scarsdale has a reputation for having great schools. But my question to you is there a way to equalize things?
Yes and no. I think that a lot of the problems that we have seen, you know, kids who come from homes where, you know, the parents didn't read to them every night. You know, they come into the, you know, their families where English isn't the first language spoken. They don't come in with the same point of entry. You know, they don't come in with that advantage. And so they need to be brought up. And we need to spend a lot of time and attention at bringing those students to the point of where other students had an advantage from 0 to 5. Kids don't start learning at 5 years old. They start learning immediately. And you really have to address that deficiency if you're going to bring the students up to the point where students who have had that advantage from 0 to 5 have already. And I don't know that we spend enough time ensuring that our system is equipped for that purpose. But I do think it's possible.
Assemblymember Amy Paulin. Amy Paulin, the 88th District, which includes Scarsdale, is a little bit on the exclusive side, no?
Well, exclusive in the sense that it's economically difficult to buy a house. You know, it's primarily single-family homes, very few apartments. I think we have one apartment house. We do have a complex with co-ops, but not very big, comparative, you know. So it's mostly single-family homes, and they are expensive. Property taxes are expensive and the homes are expensive. So it's exclusive in that regard as any community that you know, where the homes are expensive. It's not exclusive in its way of being. You know, you know, it's very inclusive in terms of, you know, once you've made it here, you know, once you own something here and you're part of the community, you can be involved in anything you want, and people will welcome you and appreciate, you know, any value that you want to offer. So I have, you know, I remember once I was very active in the League of Women Voters. It's a very active community group here in our town. And another woman who wanted to come to the league luncheon said to me, so, you know, what do you wear? Like, you know, concerned about, you know, being dressed up. And honestly, it was the last thing that anybody in Scarsdale would think about. Like, you could come in jeans and it would be totally fine. You know, it's not a community that tends to look down on anybody once you live here. You know, I have really grown to love the inclusiveness, if you will say, you know, of how people treat each other here.
You're chair of the health committee, and so my question to you is, what do you consider the most poignant, important thing that New York State has to consider when it comes to health?
Well, I think I'm gonna say two things, you know, that we have to really pay attention to, and that is making sure that everybody has health insurance, so that they can prevent illness as well as, you know, as well as go to the emergency room once it appears. That's incredibly important, and making sure that everybody has quality health care. I'm going to lump that together. And then one of the things that I'm very focused on is the disparity. Again, you know, once everybody has it, there's still a disparity. And the disparity that I'm currently looking at, which I have been extraordinarily interested in since I got here, is the issue of maternal health and maternal mortality, and making sure that all women, we now see there's a disparity primarily in the Black community and not getting enough or having enough proper treatment, right? You know, I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to that, let's just say. You know, it's something that's always been on, something that's always been a priority for me, and it's going to continue to be a priority during this tenure as health chair.
Now, Richard Gottfried, we have discussed him in this program already. I've interviewed him many, many times on this program. He retired fairly recently as the oldest serving legislator in the state, which is extraordinary because I remember him when he was the youngest. And so my question to you is, when you replace somebody like that, is that a tough thing to do?
I try not to think about it. You know, Dick is not replaceable. I mean, he was such a mentor to me. I learned so much from him. I could never be him, and I can't try to be, because that would only continue to frustrate me through my entire tenure as health chair. So I'm just going to be me, and I'm going to do the best I can, knowing that I'm never going to be Dick.
You know, healthcare is such an important issue in New York State, and as chair of the health committee, you have a very important position. So my question is, do people recognize that? I mean, after all, we've heard that women aren't always treated the way they should be. So I'm, you know, making as much trouble here as I possibly can. But my question is, are you being treated respectfully?
I don't feel like a woman. I know, you know, when I'm here, I feel like a legislator. You know, it's sometimes when I first joined the legislature, Dick we had a mutual friend, and he invited me into the group that he would have dinner with. We called it the dinner group. And so every Monday, I went to the dinner group, and I was the only female in that group. And I really didn't think about it then. That was in Albany.
Yeah, okay.
And now the only two that are left from that original group are me and Dick and Jeff Dinowitz, you know, because Dick left last year. And we had added Sandy early on, so there were two women early on. But I was the only one for quite a few years. And so now it's just Jeff, who's the only male. And we don't think about it. Like, it's, you know, we just go out. We're the dinner group that likes to have dinner together. Or we, you know, and, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, that being a male or a female really has much to do with our being legislators anymore. I think we're treated very similarly. I always felt that. You know, our individual styles are probably as important as, or more important than, you know, whether we're male or female. So I don't feel, you know, that it makes that much difference now. You know, I don't know what the younger women are feeling. But I don't feel that as a senior member that I'm treated differently than another senior member who happens to be a man.
I know you've recently said you'll be introducing legislation in New York to expand abortion access. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. We don't allow in New York pharmacists to prescribe. Some states do that. So you could get medication abortion directly from a pharmacist if they're allowed to prescribe that vis-a-vis the law in the state. And in New York, we do it a little differently. We pharmacists dispense medication. But what we do, as we did with COVID shots, for example, is we have a non-patient-specific script. A script is me, the doctor, writes a script for you, Alan, the patient, and it's an individual patient script. But if I was the same physician and I wrote a more general script that said anybody who walks into this pharmacist, not just you, but anybody who walks into this pharmacist can get the drug that I indicate. And we do that by law on certain circumstances. We did it with COVID shots. We actually allowed pharmacists to administer COVID shots through that mechanism. And so that's what I'm thinking, or that's what I am writing legislation for medication abortion. Once the FDA, which we should respect, not listen to the Texas judge. Hopefully that decision will get changed or overturned. The FDA has said now these drugs, this medication abortion, can be easily given out at a retail pharmacy. And when I checked, when I had this original idea, I ran it by doctors who are doing abortions, either prescribing medication abortion or they're doing surgical abortions. And I said, is there a reason why we wouldn't want young women in particular who don't have access, or busy women, or women who where there's providers that are hard to find or make an appointment, why we wouldn't give them access to medication abortion in this more easily obtained manner? And they said, absolutely not. They said that they are primarily doing medication abortion. They are primarily doing it through telehealth. When you see a pharmacist, there's actually, a more direct contact with a health professional. And they would give the woman the same advice that a pharmacist could give them, which is if there's any excessive bleeding or hurt or problem, which there are almost none, very minimal, go to an emergency room, call your primary doctor or what have you, so the information that would be given would be the same. And there's no reason not to make medication abortion more acceptable and more accessible and for women. There are countries that actually have it over the counter. India, huge country, lots of women. You might want to argue it has less sophisticated medical opportunities than we have here. Certainly not everyone has access there. And so what they do is they make it over the counter. And it to no one's hurt. It just provides access and helps people. So once I've heard that, I went ahead and I said, I'm drafting legislation to accomplish it. And now with this decision, oh my goodness, you want to make a point that, we here in New York believe that that women shouldn't be denied this opportunity. I mean, they shouldn't be denied having a medication abortion. Why are we forcing women to have surgery if they want to have an abortion? How awful and absurd. These drugs have been around for 20 years, and no one has had adverse reactions that anybody can think of that we know of, right? So it is so important to maintain the integrity of the FDA. We cannot let one anti-choice judge use his personal feelings to influence all the women in the United States.
Thank you, Amy Paulin. Governor Kathy Hochul has now said the state will stockpile the medication abortion drug, as will Massachusetts and other states. Won't these stockpiles encourage people from other states, like Texas, for example, where they're not always as bright as we are, to flock to New York to get the drug?
Right. I think that's great. Let's hope we don't need it.
Is there any way to get politics out of healthcare?
No. and it would be very nice if we've got politics at least somewhat out of women's health care, in particular reproductive health care. But I've been involved in that issue for a very long time, and it doesn't seem possible. We thought that Roe was guaranteed a woman's right to have an abortion, her right to make choices about her own body. And we saw just this year, Roe overturned, something that we never thought would happen. So it's only worse in some respects and very disappointing.
Are we paying our healthcare people enough?
We're paying enough. We certainly need to shore up our hospitals and our institutions. After COVID, they really have you know, need a lot more resources. There was a workforce shortage, or there is one now. You know, many people who were, I'm going to say burned out, but even more than that, you know, after COVID, they've left the profession. We need to bring in more. So that's going to cost dollars. And we have to, if we want to have good health care, you know, we have to pay for it.
Okay, we got to go real fast now because we only have a couple of seconds on recreational marijuana. Is New York doing it right?
Not yet. we've seen too many pop-ups. We have to have that under control, and certainly the rollout's been a little slow. So we have a ways to go, but we're getting there.
And on gun violence, that's also a healthcare issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, people don't realize gun violence, domestic violence, you know, these are public health issues that have to be addressed. They are clearly, in my mind, something that we have to continue to press on.
Thank you so much to our wonderful friend, Amy Paulin, who is chair of the health committee and who has done such a remarkable job on health care in the New York State Legislature and on health care policy. We thank you, and we didn't get nearly far enough, and we hope you'll rejoin us again.
Absolutely. We'll do it again. Absolutely. Thank you so much for the interview.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Capital Connection is hosted by Alan Chartok. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can sign up for weekly show updates by subscribing to our newsletter, Airwaves, and by following us on social media at WAMC Radio. Thanks for listening.